Also on now, I'm going to try and talk to you a little bit about Spartan as I knew it. And I'll start from being in Devonport Barracks in about June 43. And as I said possibly before to you, what happened? We had a draft sheet came for anybody that was in the barracks or was eligible for this draft, which at the time was highly secret. We didn't know where we were going or what or whatever, and we were forbidden, we were forbidden shore leave, and told to pack our gear. And there was quite a lot of blokes on this draft, and early on the morning of the draft we had to muster outside on the square with all our gear, bag and hammock and what have you, and we were marched down to the little railway siding which runs into the barracks. And the train that we were going for was already there. We were loaded onto this train with all our gear and locked in it. It was quite early in the morning, and off we went. I can't remember what day it was, but it doesn't matter. And off we went. We'd no idea where we were going, but Jack, if there's nothing else, he's very ingenious, and it didn't take him long to find out that it was going to go up north. So it rolled out several places immediately, and the rumour was that we were going to do this and the other, pick up this ship, which would be a destroyer, pick this up, which would be something else, and aircraft carrier, and God only knows what. And it was none of the sort, of course. And we still didn't know our destination at all. So we just had to carry on and look happy about it. Well, we ended up being on this train for the best part of a day and a night, being shunted all over the country, really. We got a packed lunch of sorts, and little stops, very, very infrequent stops to relieve ourselves or whatever, right on through the day and the night. By this time we got the idea we were going right up to Scapa Flow, but as I said earlier, we knew there wouldn't be a there possibly could have been a ship to pick up at Scapa, but it wasn't. Anyway, early in the morning of the following day, very early, we pull into a little wayside stop, and we knew we were on the west side of the country because of the sun coming up, and it was quite a nice morning. And we pulled into this little wayside station and were allowed off onto the platform where the WVS were dishing out cups of tea and sandwiches, etc., by way of breakfast. And I stood drinking a cup of tea, and I'm looking round, and I thought, this place looks vaguely familiar to me. And, you know, it bugged me, this. Anyway, there was a bit of a lull, I said to one of the ladies that was serving us, I said, where are we? She said, I can't tell you, love. I said, is this Levens Bridge in what used to be Westmorland? She said, yes, it is. I said, oh. I said, do you live local? She says, yes, I do, not too far away. So I said, do you know a family called Garnet? And she looked at me. She said, yes, I do. She said, as a matter of fact, they were neighbours of mine till the mother died. I said, well, I happen to be their cousin. And it had all come back to me in a flood that this place, Levens Bridge, was on the coast. And they lived, this family, my relatives, had lived 2 or 3 miles in a little row of cottages away from this Levens Bridge. And I went with my mother on a visit, a holiday visit, when I was quite young, no more than about 7 or 8. And it was the first time I'd ever seen these cousins of mine. And we stayed about a week. And it was a very, very primitive little place, right out in the middle of beautiful country. And I remembered all this. And she said to me, "Do you know where the boys are?" I said, "Yes, one's in the Marines and the other is in the Navy." "Where is the father?" She says, "He just disappeared with another woman." Thought, well, fair enough, you know, none of my business. So after a while she said to me, "Do you know where you're going?" I said, "No, not really." "Are you going to tell me?" She said, I said, "Do you know?" Mainly, meaning jokingly. She said, "Yes, you're going to Barrow-in-Furness." I said, "Holy." She said, "Yes, and you're going to pick a cruiser up." Well, you could have knocked me sideways. I thought, well, it's a good job Jerry hasn't got an agent round here, because it was blown wide open, this business. Apparently everybody and the mothers in that area knew about the cruiser that was being built in Vickers Yard, I think it was. And it was about to be commissioned. Well, as I said, this happened, and it was farther around Morecambe Bay to Barrow. So I said cheerio to her, and that was it. Years later, I had cause to stop off in Levens Bridge, and it was no different then to what it was then. So, you know, time doesn't alter. But the main thing I'm about to tell you was that while I was finished talking to this lady, I had a sudden urge. It came over me like a wave. I thought, I'm going to do a runner. I had like a premonition that I've a good mind to do a runner. I could get away with it because I know my way. I know where I was. The rest of the guys at the time didn't know where they were. I did. So that put me in front. And I was thinking, shall I do it? I shan't do it. And I don't know why I thought this, because that wasn't me. And in any case, we got back into the train, and that was the end of it. But I've never forgotten this feeling. It came over me just in a wave of emotion. Don't go, you know. Anyway, we went on, and we arrived in Barrow. And when we got out at Barrow, there was a reception committee for us, and we had to march into the town. And lo and behold, they laid a Marine band on for us. And it was the real McCoy. We marched into the dockyard, and quite honestly, if you've never marched at the back of a Royal Marine band, you haven't lived. Believe me, it's something. It makes you stick your chest out and march. And we marched along onto the jetty, and there was this beautiful ship. I can't describe it any more than beautiful. The lines of this ship was something else. She was a gorgeous looking thing. You might think Mrs. Cracker's talking about a warship. And, you know, she got everything, you know. And we went aboard eventually and found our messes and everything else to do with it. And it was a very emotional thing. Anyway, I don't know if it was the following day or the day after, we had the proper commissioning of the ship. And we had to muster on the jetty in our number one suits. And all the big wigs came down, and I don't know who it was that, conducted this, but somebody with a lot of scrambled egg on his cap came down and had a look at us and looked at the ship, and then the padre said a prayer, and we sang some sort of hymn, and off we went. That was it. But the people of Barra treated us very, very well. We got on famously in the town, and it was okay. It was a nice little town, and we made friends with all sorts of people up there. And of course, it had brought a lot of work into the area. And in fact, the dockyard bought us a small piano to fit in the mess. It wasn't the mess, it was the canteen. And now that brings up another point about the canteen and the layout of the ship. Now, normally, as you probably are aware, a warship has a quarterdeck, which is hallowed ground, if you like. It's a part of the ship you salute every time you cross it or walk onto it. It's where the in olden days the relics of holy relics were stored, and they used to have a big crucifix on that. But in modern warships, it had evolved into a place where you had to behave yourself when you crossed the quarterdeck. Anyway, to save space in this ship, in Spartan, they'd move the quarterdeck to the virtually onto the break of the forecastle, where you go up the ladder onto the forecastle, port and starboard. And that was being used as the quarterdeck, whilst the quarterdeck proper, or the poop, was, in the Spartans' case, it was recreational area. And immediately in the superstructure, right aft, by the Y turret, was the Naffy canteen, which was a small area, not much bigger than an ordinary living room, and this little piano was in it. And it was a good idea. It was a bit confusing if you'd been in a ship where the quarterdeck was in its proper place, as we thought. And there was other innovations in this ship. All the mess traps were like they should have been, which were stainless steel. But the stools in the messes were all padded leather. And there was a lovely steel cage, mesh cage, where you put your oilskins and your greatcoats, and they weren't rolled up and stuck in your kit bag. That was on your mess deck as well, all on this design. Everyone had a nice size locker and all like that, and brand new bathrooms with even, you know, multi showers in, everything. It was spot on, of course. And also, wonders never cease, we had a bakery, which any cruiser would have anyway, but we also had a little washing area where there was installed an automatic washer. You just put your clothes in and that was it, like the way you went. Now this immediately was taken up by two enterprising people who used to do dobbying for a small fee. But it was something else that I'd never seen in a ship at all. Now, when you come to the rest of the ship, as I knew it, apart from the fact that she got a very great number of guns, armament of 5.25s, dual-purpose guns, she had all her guns and pom-poms and torpedo tubes and God only knows what. You know, it was a real, really well-armed ship, anti-aircraft ship, anti-aircraft protection ship. That's really what it was. Lightly built because it was all welded, and there was no rivets in the ship, which frankly worried a lot of the blokes. The rumour went round that she wouldn't stand up to punishment and stuff like that. Which brings me actually to the ship's company. Now, sadly, I think, as I've said to you in the past, the ship's company left a lot to be desired, or a lot of them did. It was very mixed. We had a lot of what I can only describe as no-hopers. Blokes who've done time, they've been picked up on this draft, pushed into the draft willingly. Mind you, you never had much choice in what you were. You could go where you couldn't go. You went. You did as you were told, as you know. But this particular draft, with more than our fair share of skates. Now, I don't know whether you know the term skate before, but a skate means a wrong'un. He's always in trouble. Not just mischief, he's in trouble one way or the other. He's a damn nuisance in point of fact. He'll always do things that he shouldn't be doing, dragging everybody else in. And I think, as I mentioned before, in a short life, Spartan had over 90 royal warrants read out aboard the ship, which meant over 90 blokes sent ashore to Chokey, to prison for misdemeanour of one sort or another. Insubordination, insolence, desertion, doing runners, you name it, the entire list, you could go right through the lot. And it didn't sit very well, this sort of thing, you know. It's not made for a happy ship. Now, I've heard it said that the commander was a bit of a you-know-what. But the thing is, he'd already got his hands full. Not as I hold any brief out for most of the officers, but I remember I got very unjustly charged with making smoke one day. I was in the boiler room and this thing happened. And it was a genuine error and we did make some smoke. But it wasn't me who did it. And the Stoker Petty Officer of the Watch at that time, he was a Geordie bloke who I didn't really cotton onto at all. He was a loudmouth and a braggart. And I didn't like him, but it probably showed, you know. I was only a young bloke and I probably didn't hide my emotions enough. But he got me charged and 3 days stoppage of leave and pay, which didn't sit very well. And in the event, in the long term, he proved to me that he wasn't worth his salt, this guy. But that's another story. And as I say, it didn't sit very well. But fortunately for me, I got moved to B boiler room. Now B boiler room is one of the smallest places in the ship to work. There's very, very little deck space in it. I should think no more than about 6 feet by 6 feet, if that, for you to stand on and work and operate the boilers and everything else. And it's very, very crowded. And it's a bit claustrophobic, for that matter. But I was fortunate in as much as I made a good friend of the Stoker Petty Officer, Eric Chitty. Well, Eric wasn't really his proper Christian name, but everybody called him Eric. I don't know why, but they did. And he was a great guy. And he taught me an awful lot, and we became friends. We were no longer on watch, at any rate. We were no longer petty officer and stoker. We were mates, and it worked well, and I didn't take advantage in any way at all. I did exactly as he said, and as I say, I learned a lot. Anyway, regarding the ship itself, it went through its working up period. The life in the ship itself went on. As I say, we got blokes doing runners and stuff like that, and of course it used to upset everybody with this sort of thing going on, insofar as you didn't know what was going to happen next, or they might say, well, you're not on watch down there, you can go so and so this time, like, and it's off-putting. But anyway, we went up to Scapa, and during the working up period, and we had a run ashore this particular night in Scapa, and I know it was still light up there, you know, by 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and there was a huge marquee, and there was part of the American fleet, I don't know which fleet, but it was a load of Yankee ships, and mainly doing escort duties to Russia and stuff like that. There were ships all over, for that matter, and we used to use this canteen as well as the Yanks, and it was a bit primitive, but at least it got it pretty well organised. And anyway, the story behind this, we're walking up with several of our blokes, and it was going dusk, and coming away from the canteen was a bunch of black Americans. Now, I know they had a colour bar long before any such thing like this existed in this country. And we just said, "Aye, boys, how you going?" And we were just passing the time of day, if you like, how you going, like, and all this business. Just stood very briefly. When a bunch of white Yanks passed us, and some of the comments made to us by these white Yanks was a bit upsetting. The first thing they said, the so-and-so nigger lovers. So one of the lads, a Scotsman, as it happened, he said, "Hey, just a minute, what do you mean by that term?" And he wouldn't answer, he kept on about nigger lover. And the Scots lad said, look, slow down, what's your beef, what's wrong? And these coloured lads, the American coloured lads, the looks on the faces was enough to stop a clock, if you like. And they gradually, quietly slipped away into the sidelines and away. They knew what was going to happen. So this mate of ours said, look, get that into your head now and forever. We will talk to who we like. We're not going to ask you who we can talk to. This is our country, not yours. You're here by invitation. So sod off and don't talk to us so-and-so stupid. It averted a very nasty incident, I can tell you. But it gave us an insight as to what it must have been like for these black lads in the American Navy, because they only did stuff like serve meals. They weren't combatants at all. And they were mess boys, and cleaners. And it was not a good thing, in actual fact, because in our ships, everybody mucked in. They had it to do. It didn't matter what colour you were. You had it to do. And we found it rather very off-putting. Excuse me. Anyway, enough of that. We did our trials, and we put to sea, and we did work, such as patrol work and stuff like that. We did one run. There was a big scare about a German surface raider again coming out, and we got sent on patrol, which went right across the top of the world, somewhere around the Denmark Strait and that sort of area. Then we came back, we had a bit of propeller trouble, and we went down to Liverpool. Well, as I say, the ship, she was a what you could call a wet ship. She'd roll on wet grass, if you like. That's the term of phrase we used to use. And, you know, at speed, she could be very, very uncomfortable. And not much better than a destroyer would be. And, as I said, we sprung this propeller somehow or other, and we went into, I think it was Albert Dock, Royal Albert Dock, in Liverpool. And got amongst the Scouse labour force down there, which was an eye-opener, believe me. Now, we had a fair number of Scousers in the ship's company. And to say that they can be very hilarious is really something of an understatement. And I had a watch-keeping oppo. It was on the opposite watch to me, in harbour, what they call it wasn't the steaming watch, but it was a harbour watch-keeper. You worked 24 hours on in harbour, watch on, watch off, and they had a full 24 hours off. Now, this lad was on what they called 2 and 2. That was second-class leave and second-class conduct. He'd been a bad lad, you see. He'd done a runner and what have you. But in himself, he wasn't a bad bloke. He wasn't a wronger as such. At least I didn't reckon him as. And, pardon me, I got on quite well with him. Anyway, he'd been married about a year, and he'd got a small baby of only a few months old, and he'd never seen this child because he'd been in choking, and he was desperate to see this kid. So we talked about it a while, and he said to me, "Look," he said, "I'm going to go over the wall," because that was easy enough in the dockyard. And he said, "I'm going to go over the wall and see my kid," and he said, take it kindly if you'd at least cover me whilst I got away. So I said, well, yeah, fair enough. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do for you. I'll stand your watch for you. I said, but after that, you're on your own. I'll stand that watch and reckon on that we have swapped over, and then when you don't show up to do my watch, well, that's it. Fair enough. So you have him 4 hours start, you see. So this is what he did, and we got a ladder in a special place that if you hadn't got a pass, you could get out anyway. Because the Scouser dockies, I think they showed everything that was movable over the wall, out of the dock, up this ladder and down the other side, intruding fittings off the ship and God only knows what. Anything that wasn't nailed down or bolted down, you lost. But they were laughable with it anyway. And off he went. Well, he never came back. He never came back at all. And the sequel to it was that when we were eventually in Aurora, over 2 years, 2.5 years later, he came up the gangway in Malta to take passage homeward bound with us. And the laugh of it was, he did 3 months in the Nick once again, and out he came, a straight draft to Malta, and he never went to sea again. He got a number of all the numbers. He had a right job. And we were us flying around the Med, getting shot at and shooting at people, and all this business, and he never heard a shot fired in anger from then on. So, who were the mugs? It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Anyway, we got the buzz that the ship was moving. And there again, this premonition bit came to me. And I thought, to myself, I didn't voice it to any of the guys, I thought, I think we're going to move a long, long way away. I couldn't think where or anything. I'm not that clever. And I thought, I knew one of a couple of these guys, local, one lived in Manchester, one was a scouser, they were going to go over the wall. So I got my 24 hours off, but I hadn't got a pass. So I teamed up with these guys, and we got together a load of duty-free cigarettes, which we shouldn't have done, we know, but we did. They were quite easy to get hold of. And I always remember it, being stood on Lime Street Station, flogging these cigarettes at sixpence a pack for 20, when the civvies were paying double that, and to get the train fare into Manchester, which we eventually did. Now these two then, we made an arrangement to meet in Manchester and go back aboard the following day. Well, I was all right, but they'd done a proper runner. They weren't even, off duty. Anyway, I got aboard a Sheffield train in Manchester, and this is the funny thing about it. I still got some cigarettes left, and I was flat broke. So I thought I'll try and flog a few of these to these passengers. And the train had been a holiday train from farther up the line at Blackpool and such. And I walked down this corridor into the train, and it was an internal corridor, you know, right with the seats either side. And I walked out of one compartment into the next, looked down to my right, and who should be sat there, of all people, but my mum and dad. They'd been to Blackpool on a few days' holiday and just checked it off the top and gone, because it was not too bad on the West Coast, you see. Anyway, after the initial surprise, I felt like a real idiot, you know, stood there selling contraband cigarettes, and my daddy, he never said a word, and he knew what I was up to. Anyway, when we got to Sheffield, of course, I had no pass. And it was going to be a bit sticky. So I made a pretext to my mother. I said, look, Mum, I've got to go and see the railway officer here for what time the train's back. And, I said, well, see outside on the footpath, you see. So what happened was that I just nipped down the platform a ways, and there's a lift that is still there, that on Midland Station at Sheffield, and it goes down to the next floor, which is outside exit. And as look at it, there was a porter shoving a trolley with a whole load of kit bags on this trolley, and all I did was give him a push with this through the lift, down one floor and out the other gate. Thank you very much, mate, he said. I said, you're welcome, and I walked away, just as daft as that. And so much for security. Anyway, I got home, and of course, I went up to see my girlfriend, who I'm now married to and have been for the last 52 years, thank God. And I didn't have long with her, and as I say, a couple of hours at the most, said goodbye, and down to Mum's, picked my clean washing up, and Dad gave me a few bob, enough to get me back on the railway anyway, legitimately, with a legitimate ticket. And off I went, no problem at all, got back in the ship, to find that these guys had never shown up at all. They'd done a runner again, so they were short-handed again. And this was the story of Spartan. Blokes doing runners and people getting drafts to out of the blue, etc. I know they went back down to Plymouth then, which was our, you know, Devonport in our port division, and still doing working up trials. And we started doing sweeps out of Plymouth across to the Channel Islands. Now this, by this time, is somewhere around October, mid-October. And we were out looking for jolly convoys at this time to try and bump one and do some damage to it, because we knew they were running convoys. And we were doing this run, I should think, for about 9 or 10 nights. And, you know, we closed the protection station, the usual thing. And we'd get across there and keep a lookout for jelly, trying to, you know, blockade runners in point of fight. Anyway, we went back in this particular morning, and it was a Wednesday, I think, and we got this strong rumour that we were going to go foreign.